what I wanted to talk with you about tonight was the importance, I think, of understanding this particular business model and the requirements for success. It almost matches perfectly to what we were talking about at the beginning of the call and the way that Bruce is using the DVD by Dr. Dutchess during his health awareness seminars. He is using it according to the way the system is set for you to use it. He's not just passing it out to people and telling them to watch it in a vacuum. He's sitting there after he's invited people over, watching it with them, but because he knows what's on it, he's actually watching the people so that he can see when they have a concern or when it appears that there's a time to pause the video so that he can answer their questions. Because, of course, we're really in the information sharing business, and we want to educate our customers. So the importance of understanding the model is really, really critical. And when you think about it, you know, we say we have an unfranchised, and we say we're in network marketing, but we really need to focus on the fact that this is an unfranchised business model. And when you want to understand what a business model is, it's really not complicated. It's simply the plan that a company implements to generate revenue and make a profit from its operations. It's the way they do business. And the model, whatever the business, is always going to include specific components and specific functions. And it's not something new. Sometimes I think we think that business models are a creation of the 20th century, but that just really isn't the case, and you can keep it as simple as it needs to be. If you think about a restaurant, their business model is to make money by cooking and serving food to people. That's the way they put it in the dictionary. A website's business model, though, might not be as clear because they could make money maybe by direct selling, or they could provide a free service and then sell advertising. You know, when you're on the Internet and you have all those pop-ups all over the place, that's what those people are doing. But either one of these particular business models is successful only because it has its own unique set of components, which are the elements of the system, and it has its own functions. And I think sometimes when we're working with our particular business model, it's like the model is at the top, and we're doing everything at the level below it, and we may be very busy with activity, but that activity does not mirror the specific functions and elements that are necessary for that particular system. And then we wonder why we're not being particularly successful. If you think about your function, the functions of this business, that means that that's your specific role. You function as a parent. That's your role in relation to your children. You function as a spouse. You function as an employee. You know, something as simple as your children growing. Growth is a function of nutrition. If you have nutrition, you grow. And if you translate it to what we're doing, success with the unfranchised is a function of the two critical elements, exposing your product and exposing your business. And that's about as simple and as complex as it gets. So both functions and every component or element of this system, they require direct action. And that's the challenge. Direct sales and direct prospecting and recruiting. Now, that means that you have to connect the dots from what you're doing to the sales. You have to connect the dots from you to the prospecting and recruiting. It's not something that's going to happen around you. And so I have a couple of questions I want us to look at. The first one is, where are you in terms of the business model that requires direct sales? And I know some of you are not anywhere near where you need to be, and that's why you want Bruce and others who are very successful in their retailing efforts to come to where you are. But you don't have to do that, because what you have to get clear on, I think, is really understanding what works and what doesn't work, and then figuring out what you are willing to work in, equally important, if not more important, what are you willing not to work with, okay? And because this is direct sales, note I said that direct action. Direct sales is one of the areas that we really, for some reason, we don't want to focus on. We don't want to really accept, I think, and let alone embrace the fact that we are in the direct sales business. Our success depends, is a function of our ability to sell our products. And so, because I wanted you to look at or understand how important this direct sales piece is, I went to the Direct Sales Association site and downloaded some information that speaks to the success levels relative to the various products that are in our industry. And the first one concerns the percentage of sales by major product groups. And this is where we're very fortunate because we offer such a wide range of quality products for people's use. But I want you to listen to these numbers in terms of what you're doing and how you match this model that's very successful for many people. Out of the direct sales categories, the number one category was personal care products. That included cosmetics, jewelry, skincare, those type of products. 30.8% were in the personal care. And that for us is our Motives, our Soft and Elegant, our Royal Spa, our Skin Intelligence, all of those items that we have under the personal care umbrella, and we have many. The second category at 30.5% was home and family care products. Number one under that list was cleaning products. We have our Snap. We have things that I think many of you don't think about anymore. We have our ClearShield products. We have our EcoSoft, those products that take care of oil stains. We have our aloe gel. We have many home and family care products that can be used to gain exposure for our products and ultimately exposure for our business with the people that we know and come in contact with. The third category was wellness, and that was 16.1%. Now, I know those numbers might seem surprising because we always hear about wellness in the trillion-dollar industry, and all that is true. What I'm wanting you to understand is that in the overall model of direct sales, the major product groups line up this way. 30.8% in personal care products, 30.5% in home and family care products, 16.1% in wellness. Those are significant numbers in each of the categories, but I think it's important for you to see that you have quality products in these top three areas, and you need to be exposing all three of these areas, not just one area. You may have a customer who came to you because of the wellness products, but by the time you're doing your second, no later than your third follow-up, you need to be expanding the possibilities with that particular customer and sharing what else you have to offer. Because if you don't, think about those numbers. You're not matching the direct sales model if you don't ever gain exposure for your personal care products or your home and family care products or your wellness. Services and other, which we have some of those as well, is 14.3%. My point is that it's going to take you a lot longer the farther down the list of major product groups you stay. Now, when it comes to your particular sales strategy for moving these products, of course, your sales strategy is the method that you use to generate your sales. And the Direct Sales Association found that individual person-to-person selling, that's our one-to-one marketing, is 69.8%. Almost 70% of the people who have success in direct selling use the person-to-person approach. No big surprise to us. The group selling or the equivalent of our parties that we invite people to is 27.8%. The customer placing an order directly with the company in follow-up to a face-to-face solicitation is less than 2%. Okay, which tells you what? If you're going to be anywhere near the model that's successful in our industry, you need to be focusing on the top two categories, person-to-person selling, which is simply asking for the sale, and then the party plan group selling, which will get you almost to 28%. And in that area, we have numerous tools because we have our health awareness survey, we have our health awareness seminars, we have our Nutraphysical, we have the portal for people to go and complete the Nutraphysical if we haven't already printed it down for them. When you think about what the possibilities are from within our particular business model to move you to the level of success you need in the overall direct selling business model, I mean, it's almost a perfect fit. It's not just that we're one-to-one with the person that we're wanting to expose our product to, but we're actually on a one-to-one line with what is already successful in the direct sales industry, and that's the piece I want you to see. And when it comes to that face-to-face selling, the majority of that is in the home. But what was interesting is that almost 7% of it occurs in the workplace. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're sitting in the workplace hosting a product party over lunch, but it does mean that you're gaining exposure. And that can be something as simple as having your mall talk with you when you're sitting in the break area or having your mall talk on your desk, because most people always want to get in your business. And so they're going to ask you, well, what is that? What is that you're looking at? What is that you're drinking when everyone else is drinking coffee and you're drinking our awake product, or you're making a B12 cocktail? That's the reason I believe that some of the sales do occur in the workplace. Interestingly, I found under the remote selling piece, and this I think really speaks to why we need to get better about our follow-up, almost 16% of the remote selling occurs on the phone. And it's not from direct solicitors. It's the follow-up calls. If you've already contacted a customer, if you've sold a product to someone, you're much more likely, almost 16% of people are buying from other people on the telephone. And yet for many of us, that's the thing we dread the most, is making those follow-up calls. But if you combine those follow-up calls with the workplace sales and you're in the home sales, there's absolutely no way that you wouldn't have a higher level of success with your retail than you currently have. So I want you to think about what you're doing specifically as it relates to what this data indicates successful people are doing. Okay, they are focusing on the major categories of product groups, personal care, home and family care, and wellness, and they are using all the necessary venues, person-to-person selling first, party plan group selling second, and remote selling telephone follow-up third. And when you think about our particular system components, you have the product shows, you have the health awareness surveys, you have the health seminars, you have the mall talks, you have the portals. The reality is, think about the business model that you're currently involved in, or even just think about your family model. You either match to the model or you don't. You see, if you don't match to the model, then you're using a different model. And if you're using a different model, you can't get the same results that this particular one is going to afford you. It's just not going to work because our particular business model requires exposing the product. And the system components in place for exposing the products are the things we just discussed. So if you don't do those, how in the world are you going to accomplish the direct sales necessary to help you achieve the goals you set? You know, because this particular business model does not work without sales. It's just not going to happen. So if you're thinking about succeeding with the direct sales component, then it really gets to a place where you have to focus on your willingness and your ability to do what is necessary. And under your willingness, you just have to think, what are you willing to learn? Are you willing to do self-training? Are you only willing to do other-centered training? You're only going to go to NMTSS events? That's a wonderful option, but it is never going to get you the level of comfort that you need with the information that you're going to gain by spending at least that 15 minutes a day reading your career manual and reading through your brochures. So you have to be willing to learn in a variety of ways, and you have to be willing to share. And sharing means you have to know about our audios, you have to know the products, and you have to know the process for someone to use our products to gain maximum benefit. It's not enough for you to just sell people bottles of OPC and not tell them about the loading dose, because you're setting them up for failure, which means you're setting yourself up for failure as well. It really means you have to be willing to have conversations with people, and I know for many of us, that's the problem. We really don't feel like talking with people. But you can't be successful in a direct sales business that relies on person-to-person selling almost 70% of the time if you're not willing to have conversations with people. And I know we talk a lot about the relationship piece, and there's this one guy who comes to some of the speaking events I attend. His name is Terry Brock, and he focuses on something he calls our commerce, which is relationship commerce. And he thinks that that is actually far more important than e-commerce will ever be. And I think he's right, because unless you have that relationship with someone and are willing to speak to them, you're never going to get into the commerce side of your business. And in this business, the commerce side is absolutely critical. So you have to be willing to maybe make some changes for you. Maybe you haven't really been learning your material. Maybe you haven't been willing to share. You have to decide if you're going to do something different in that area. Now, in terms of your ability to succeed with this component, you have to decide, are you going to make the resource commitment? And the resource commitment is going to involve time and it's going to involve money. You have to focus on a retail goal. It really is going to require a greater commitment of time than it is money, because in most cases you can take orders for the product that someone is interested in having. So for those who think, well, I can't afford to stock an inventory, That's not a component of this particular business model. You do not have to have an inventory. What you have to have are your basic brochures and mall talks in order to let people know what you have available, and then you have to make the time commitment to be able to take their orders, collect the money, order the product, and deliver it, and then do the appropriate follow-up. So there are a couple of ways that you can work at succeeding with this particular component. And those are issues that I really want you to think about under the umbrella question of where your activity is in terms of the business model component that we're involved in that requires direct sales. And then the second area I want you to think about is where are you in terms of the business model that requires direct prospecting and recruiting? And the emphasis is on direct. Okay. Who is in your circle of conversation? I know we talked before about having the lifestyle approach, and we speak with people as we go through the day, and then some of you will share, well, you went to the grocery store, you went to the post office, and you went to all these places, but you didn't get any prospects. Well, I was looking at myself, because that's always a good reflection of what's going on with other people sometimes, and your circle of conversation and your attempt to use the lifestyling approach is really not effective if you are standing in the grocery line behind someone, and instead of having a conversation with the person in front of you, you're on your cell phone. Or you're in a waiting room with other patients or clients, and you're not just sitting there talking with anyone. You're writing notes or you're reading a book. I'm not saying that there aren't occasions where you may need to do these things, but if your intent is to build a circle of conversation with people during the lifestyle approach, then you have to embrace that lifestyle. That means you don't stand in line behind someone at the post office and you're sending text messages on your phone, because that is not going to lead to a conversation. If it does, it's going to lead to a conversation about text messaging, not a conversation about how's the weather and how are you doing and, oh, by the way, what do you do? It's not going to work. So you have to think first in the area of direct prospecting and recruiting, who is in your circle of conversation? What is going on with your lifestyle? And when you're doing that and you're thinking, well, these are people are probably not the right people for my business anyway, the next area involves understanding where the people in direct sales come from. And according to the Direct Sales Association, they have this really nice pie chart about where we all come from. Some people with college, technical, or trade school make up 32% of the people. High school graduates or less make up 24% of the people. Postgraduate degrees make up 8%, and college graduates make up 35%. So you have people with some college at 32%, high school graduates or less at 24%, postgraduates at 8%, and college graduates at 35%. So if that's where the people currently succeeding in direct sales come from, who are you talking with and who are you ignoring? And you have to ask yourself, why are you prejudging people when the reality is most of us aren't exactly sure why we were invited into this vehicle? We really don't know why the person decided, but most of us are pretty glad that they did. But I know that some of you have decided you only want to focus on this group of people, or you don't want to talk to this group of people, or this group doesn't have the necessary qualifications. I think you really need to change your focus there, because clearly there are a variety of people who are involved in the direct sales industry who are successful, and we don't want to be the ones to eliminate people without any justification. And the next area under the direct prospecting and recruiting model is, what are you doing with the prospects, recruits, and distributors that you currently have? I know some of you have small organizations, and they aren't necessarily growing. Some of you have large organizations, and they aren't necessarily growing. For a minute, I want you to consider what I'll call the worldview of employees, and the fact that the people who choose to do business with us, they have choices. And I was reading this article about employees, and it was in the Black Enterprise magazine for February. And they're talking about the fact that it's cheaper to keep them. Losing a good employee is going to cost you. I want you to transfer what I'm saying over to your distributor base. There's a guy who says he knows he's a valued employee based on feedback and reviews. He believes his supervisor trusts him. Do your distributors feel this way about you? He goes on to say, I want to be used to my fullest potential, and I don't want to feel like just a number. How about your distributors? Do they feel that way, or do they know how you feel about them? Now, consider the potential income that can be made for us with our distributor base and how much it costs us when we don't bring someone in properly. When this article estimates that replacing a worker who makes $48,000 a year would cost the company up to $40,000 in lost productivity because they have to replace recruitment ads, interview new candidates, train new employees, pay overtime to other employees who now have to pick up the slack. Think about the fact that the reasons that most people leave their jobs really don't have a lot to do with money. And this guy who wrote this book, The Seven Hidden Reasons Employees Leave, he said that when people talked about what they were looking for in their next job, money was important, but it was hardly ever at the top of the list. And here are some of the reasons that people leave, and I think this really matches perfectly for us. The job does not meet an employee's expectations. That's number one. Retention begins during the interview process. Job responsibilities and benefits should be clearly outlined and defined. Miscommunication at this stage sets a bad precedent for the professionalism and integrity of the organization. Now, doesn't that sound like us? But again, our business model takes care of that. It gives us the Getting Started Action Guide. It details the responsibilities from our side, the expectations from our side, and the responsibilities and expectations on the other side. So there can be no misunderstanding. There won't be miscommunication at the interview point because we're sharing the Getting Started Action Guide with every single person before we sign them into business with us. I know we all are doing that because we talked about that before. The second reason they leave, the employee and the job are mismatched. This usually happens when management is in a hurry to fill a position, the article said. It's better to take your time and be thorough, even if it takes longer. Think about it as hire fast, suffer slow. Now, I know that's got to ring some bells with a few people on this phone because we get so excited about just getting a person, and well, I want to get them in now. Really what you're saying is I want to get them in now before they find out about the requirements so I can get this immediate surge of volume, but it's absolutely not going to be worth it. Robert used to call those donut holes on your report because you're going to wind up chasing a person to fill out the required forms, to follow up with them on their customers. You don't even have a names list, and it's all because they were a mismatch from the beginning. But they were a mismatch. It's not their fault. They were a mismatch. It's our fault because we didn't spell out the requirements, and we just wanted to get it done quickly. The third reason people leave is there's a lack of effective feedback. It says that most employees experience some sort of disengagement before they decide to leave. But a manager can step in and reverse this process by simply sitting down with the employee and asking, how are you doing? And again, for us, our business model is taking care of that. What are weekly accountability reports for? It's the same reason we have weekly corings. None of our distributors ought to be surprised about what's working and what's not working. They ought to be getting immediate feedback from us because the reality is with a new distributor, yes, you're meeting with them once a minimum of once a week, but you're talking with them almost every day. So, again, our business model gives us everything we need to prevent these core problems. And the fourth reason that they leave that I think is relevant to us is there's a lack of development and advancement opportunities. Managers and executives, the article says, need to think of their company and look at each individual as a specific talent, okay? The employee's experience must be managed from their first day on the job to the last. You can't just hire them and forget about them. And I know for sure that there's no one on this phone that has ever just brought in a distributor and forgot about them, right? However, if you use our business model, you can't do that because you're going to be taking them, if not conducting their first new distributor training. And you're going to be going with them to the second look with their guests. And you're going to be meeting with them to do the two-on-ones with the people on their names list that you receive from them because when you sat down with them and went through the Getting Started Action Guide, they knew that was an expectation and a responsibility of theirs. So you see, our business model allows us to connect all the dots to make sure that we maintain our distributor base and that the people who we're bringing into business with us feel valued and appreciated, which is what almost all of us want to have happen. So when you're thinking about what you've done in terms of where you are according to the model of direct involvement in prospecting, recruiting, and distributors, you know what you need to do because the system that we're working tells you very clearly what has to be done. And when you think about the fact that you may not be doing these things, it's just like when you were getting your jobs. You had your own questions in your mind, right? You had questions that you were wondering about the people who were interviewing you. And don't forget, those questions that Jackie Blasco shared with us, people have those questions in their mind when you're doing or not doing what you ought to be doing. And what's that first question? Can I trust the people? Well, how can I trust the person if they weren't clear with me up front about my responsibilities and the expectations, and then 60 days from now they're bothering me about filling out a form so that they can get paid when they haven't even helped me talk with one person on my behalf? Can I trust the people? They're asking you that question, whether or not they ever say it out loud. And therefore, when we're working this business model, we need to be doing the things that maintain not just our personal integrity, but the integrity of our business model, because that form of integrity is both structural and moral, and we need to keep them both intact in order to have the success that we're working to have with this particular business. And if you're not doing that, and I know that many of you aren't yet, which is one of the reasons why we're talking about this, it's really important to understand that if you're not going to do the behaviors that support success with this particular business model, what in the world are you going to do in order to achieve your goals? All successful goal achievement requires following a model. It's not just this one. Everything requires that. You can't operate a restaurant as if it's a sports arena. It's not going to work. If your goal is education, then the model is going to require time, money, and a commitment. Now, you have a variety of ways to achieve it. You can do that online. You can do a correspondence. You can do an extended program. You can do an accelerated program. But you still have to follow the basic model of commitment, time, and dollars. Same thing in the corporate world. If that's the business model you're successful in, and many of you are very successful, but you're successful because you're following the model. You're putting in the time, you've made the commitment to stay through completion of various products, and you've also involved yourself in the political and social connections that are a necessary part, maybe a necessary evil, but still a necessary part of the corporate world. What I'm sharing with you is the need to transfer those same skills that you already use in those business models and bring them over to this business model. Because when you do that, you will be amazed at the level of success that you can have. It's really just a question of using the existing tools and techniques we have in order to become more aligned with the requirements. That's all. And alignment simply means it just requires measuring for balance, and a standard for that measurement is helpful and it's necessary. You have to know what you're working with, okay? What are you doing with your time? Again, back to the Direct Sales Association. They maintained that the average percent of time people spent in this industry selling the products and services, 44%. Administration and paperwork, 19%. And I know some of you are seriously flipping those numbers. Recruiting and sponsoring others, 15%. Training, 10%, and other, 9%. So selling the product and services, that's the bulk of what we do, 44%. Recruiting and sponsoring others, 15%. Admin, 19%. I think with our system, your admin can easily be down to 10% because we just don't have that much to do, especially with unfranchised headquarters. It takes care of so many things for us, all right? So think about where you are, again, in terms of the model. How does the time you're putting in compare to that? If you're spending 10% of your time selling a product and 5% recruiting and sponsoring other people, well, right there, you know that your activity is out of sync with the components and functions required for success in this business model. It's just not going to happen. All right? And in this area, I think, it's the self-assessment that's absolutely essential for you to determine where you are in order to focus your efforts on where you want to go. And a lot of that gets back to your reason for doing this business. And most people, according to the Direct Sales Association, decided to become involved in direct sales for additional income. 36%, in fact, wanted additional income. 31% really felt like it's their business and making money through direct sales is important. And 29% became involved simply to get discount, wholesale, or free products. Now, That's an important number for you. If almost 30% of the people are involved solely for discount, wholesale, or free products, that tells you why you have to spend 44% of your time selling products and services in order to gain customers and potential business associates, and also why you have to spend at least 15% of your time recruiting and sponsoring others, because some people are simply involved because they want to get the products at a wholesale cost, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you need to know that. That's part of your self-assessment, because if you want to take your business to a much higher economic results level, then you need to be aware of the fact that maybe 30% of your organization only wants to be involved in order to get wholesale products. And that means you have to obviously maintain a good relationship with them, but you literally have to replace that 30% with people who want to build an organization in order for you to ever get to the level that you're working towards, you see? But if you don't know that one-third of your organization is only interested in getting the products at a lower price, then how are you going to know what other adjustments you need to make? That's the beauty of a business model. All you have to do is look at the specific requirements of what it takes for that model to work, and then measure that against your particular activity. And the wider the gap between the two, really the less similar your activity is to the activity that I've shared with you this evening, the more you know you need to make adjustments. And if you're not within these parameters, you've got to know that the way you're going is not going to result in the success that you said you're working towards. It's just not. It's just a mismatch. But just as there is a business model, there are also models for you and other people to follow when you're sharing what you have with others. And that's where you share other people's stories. That's where you share the profiles. It's like we always talk about picking your page in the profiles. Well, now Russell has his page in the profiles in the National Supervising Corner. That's great. And when the next one comes out, we'll also get Selton and Patricia on their page, and that's great. And so you can share, I guess we can call it incremental modeling. You can share what other people are doing while they work towards various levels of success in this particular business model, and they've done it solely using the system components and the functions that make up this particular unfranchise that we're involved in. And so when you're thinking about that, it's almost as if we have to get to a place where we're asking ourselves different questions in terms of the direct involvement in the prospecting and recruiting aspect, and asking different questions of the people that we're talking with as we build our circle of conversation. And I don't usually like to recommend, and sometimes I don't even like to read many of the books that come out concerning what goes on in the networking world, because there's so many theories out there. It's really like Kevin shares, sometimes the flavor of the month that people can just get carried away with and lose their focus on working on their particular business model. But there is one aspect of the cash flow quadrant that I do think is valuable. And it's valuable for you in terms of your involvement with people before you decide whether or not they're a good candidate for becoming one of your business associates. And it's only the aspect that speaks to defining the quadrants. It's very helpful to let people define themselves. Robert used to say all the time, find out what people are willing to do and help them do it exceedingly well. And I think this aspect in this quadrant allows you to accept people's definition of themselves. And if you're familiar at all with the quadrants, you have the circle divided into four, and one is an employee, the people who really believe that the 45-year plan is the solution. The second quadrant is the self-employed. They want to be their own boss. The third quadrant is the business owner, which would equal more money. And the fourth quadrant is the investor, more money and more time freedom. If you are talking with someone who is 100% committed and thinks as an employee and is unwilling to move to another quadrant, that is not the person for you to bring into business with you. That is the person for you to sell product to, and that is a person for you to ask to host a show for you, and that is a person for you to ask for referrals. But if someone tells you that that is where their core is, believe them. They know what they're talking about. If someone is in quadrant three and they're a business owner and they're looking to make more money, then that's a far greater possibility of success in the connection between the two of you. Sometimes there's no connection between a self-employed person and a business owner because some people believe that the only way to success is simply to own your own business and don't see the possibilities for expanding. I happen to think that this networking business of ours is actually one of the best ways to allow us to come back and invest in traditional businesses if that's something we want to, because we'll have the income flexibility to handle the ups and downs of traditional businesses. But that is the one area I think is appropriate for you to begin asking yourself and asking the other people, where do they see themselves? Most people know themselves better than you ever will. You know, think about what parts of you there are that you've never shared with anyone. And don't force anyone else to fit your worldview. We know what it takes for our business model. We know what it takes in terms of our involvement in the direct sales piece relative to retail sales and relative to prospecting and recruiting. And when you're clear on where you are in terms of the business model, both for direct selling and for direct prospecting and recruiting, I think you can understand that it's just important for you to accept your truth for you, okay, and decide that you're going to do what it takes for you to get your business to another level. And I think the critical foundation there, you know, as most things we discuss, it gets back to what I call your ABCs. One, it gets back to attitude, and then it gets back to belief, and it gets back to the commitment. And the attitude, I saw something, it was ironic since Nordstrom is one of my favorite stores, but there was an article with one of the Nordstrom's executives in it. And what he was saying about attitude really speaks to most of the experiences I've ever had in their stores and why they spend so much time with new employees. He said, we can teach cash register, we can't teach attitude. And that's the piece that I want you to work on when you're talking with people about where they see themselves, because they have to bring the attitude with them. They're not going to develop it. They can learn a lot, and personal growth and development is a wonderful aspect of being involved in this business. But if their attitude is that they're over here, you're going to have a very difficult time moving that attitude, even though you move the physical body to another location. And your belief is obviously important. You know, how sure are you in what you're doing? How sure are you that what you're doing is legitimate for you and legitimate enough for you to share with other people? And then the C, of course, is your commitment. And our definition of commitment is always the pledge you make to yourself. How committed are you to doing what you said you would do? Not what you said you would do to me, but what you said you would do for yourself. And I want to end with this article that I have that Harvey McKay wrote. He obviously writes, I think, like in every paper. Maybe he used to write once a week. I'm not quite sure how often he still publishes. But this is one that speaks to you really being clear about how you're going to follow the model for success. And he says when the World Series or the Super Bowl rolls around, there's a reliable way to pick the winners. The people who say, I'm just glad to be here, won't be wearing championship rings when the game is over because they achieved their goal before the game began. What was their goal? Their goal was, I'm just glad to be here. Okay? He believes, and I agree, that the difference is how much of a risk are you willing to take. The greatest danger to any business, he argues, is not risk, it's the lack of risk. And I think that's equally true in our lives. Being complacent and accepting where we are can be perfectly okay. I'm not saying that it isn't. If where you are is exactly where you want to be, then I'm very happy for you. What I am not happy about, though, is if where you are is not where you want to be and you're not willing to take the risk, take the chance that maybe things will be a little rough on your way, but totally worth it when you get to where you said you want to get to. If you don't want to take the risk, then it would be better for you to say, I'm not willing, back to the beginning of this call, to do the necessary steps to achieve success with this particular business model. Because there is no way to achieve success with this business model unless we follow the components and the functions and every element of the system and focus on those two critical pieces, exposing our product and exposing our business. And if we're not going to do that to the levels that we discussed, then we're really not being honest with ourselves. And if we're not being honest with ourselves about this business, I don't believe it's possible for us to approach other people and share with them what we have to offer when we're not clearly accepting it ourselves. And I think that's the reason why some of us struggle with building the conversational circle and building the relationships that are necessary, because we really aren't comfortable. And it would be better for you to take some time out, do your self-assessment again, and determine whether or not you think you're in the right place mentally to be able to approach other people about this business. But you cannot do it at 50%. You really can't. This requires 100% in terms of attitude, belief, and commitment. Doesn't require 110%. I never did understand why people say that. It requires what you have, and what you have is 100% of you. What you get to decide is where you're going to invest that 100% of you and how much of it you're going to put into building this business. When I gave you the assignment last week, it was simply for you to contact 7 out of the 10 people who did not know you had a business and share some piece of what we have to offer with them. And speaking of numbers, according to my feedback, less than 7 out of 10 of you did that. Why? I have no idea. Maybe it's one of these issues we talked about tonight. I hope so. Maybe you aren't comfortable with using some of the system components. Maybe you need to send an email and ask for a referral to someone else in the forum who can help you get more comfortable about what to do with health awareness surveys or what to do with a health seminar or even how to host a product show. Whatever you need to ask in order to help you move forward is a question you need to ask, because that is not taking the risk. You're not wanting to take the risk to ask the question because you don't want someone to know that you don't know, but you do know because you know enough to ask the question, you see? And that puts you well ahead of many people who don't even know that they don't know. So if you weren't able to contact people and you didn't because you had no clue what to say to them, just contact us so that we can put you in touch with somebody else who can help you work through that piece if you're willing to begin taking the risk to actively engage in working this business model, the one and only way that it can work, exposing your product and exposing your business, okay? So the assignment for this next two-week period will be much easier. I really just want you to go to unfranchise.com, download the diagnostic test, and retake that if you've taken it before, which I think most of you have. If you haven't, go ahead and take it this first time, and you don't have to share your score, but identify two areas for which you can increase your score before our next call on May the 4th. And I know you can do that. There's just no way, unless you're getting 100% on every area, and I don't think that you are, or you would have already told me that, and I would have put it on the congratulations board. So take the diagnostic test, identify two areas to increase your score in before May the 4th, and then let me know what those two areas were, okay? The Feed Your Mind quote for this week is success is founded on seeing and satisfying the needs of people. And, of course, I'll email that to you when we get off the phone. The quote again is success is founded on seeing and satisfying the needs of people. And don't forget, go to the website and send me information on regional challenge winners. I know there's a lot of regionals coming up and any other advancements and progress that you're making. And, again, congratulations to Russell Williams on achieving National Supervising Coordinator. So I hope you all have a great week, and I look forward to hearing from you. Okay. I know you're there. I hear that noise. That's for sure.
Excellent. Excellent call. I think I needed this.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. Thank you.
The statistics are just what I need.
Okay. Okay. You know, maybe what I should do is put some of that, I'll try and scan some of that in and put it up on the site so you can see that.
Okay.
Okay. I think I'll do that. And I did get the last call uploaded on the site. It's loaded under the conference calls. And I put the business wellness assessment. It's under conference calls, but it's really just a printout from that one call.
Okay.
Okay. So that information is on there, and I look forward to hearing from you all. Okay, take care.